Blog Talk Radio.
This is Elio. What is up, everyone? Welcome to another edition of The Cave Show. Hopefully everyone is having a good Tuesday. And I have that mess in my voice. I don't quite know why. I think I'm too young to get old man's voice. Either way, this is The Cave Show. This is. Hopefully everyone is having a fantastic Tuesday. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Who should be in the football playoffs? Who are your Final Four teams? Is the committee getting this right? We're going to talk about that. We are definitely going to talk about this game last night. Is Houston for real? Is that a team that you would like to face in the playoffs? In the NFL, the Cardinals are cutting people. They're 2-9. Now they decide to cut people. We'll talk about that as well. So much to get into, so little time. We do have a guest joining us about a half hour after the hour. Arizona Republican, Easy Central War winning columnist Greg Moore will be joining us then. Great to have him on board. Always a great person to catch up with. Like I said, this is The Cave Show. This is PLR, and we are brought to you by the one, the only Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Almond School in Chandler Heights. It's 4901 South Almond School in Chandler, Arizona. Get in there, let them know the PLR sent you. They will take 10% off of any cigar purchase that you may have. That's right, 10% off of any cigar purchase that you may have. It's Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, now serving beer and wine. You can also become a club member, get a locker that backs directly up to a humidor, and never worry about your sticks going bad. Best selection of cigars in the Valley of the Sun. Get in there, Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco. Let them know PLR sent you, and they will take 10%. Off of any cigar purchase that you may have. Again, thank you for joining The Cave Show today. This is PLR to get into today. Like I said, about a half hour after the hour, Arizona Republican AZ Central Award winning columnist Greg Moore will be joining us. Call in number, as always, is 917-889-7828. All calls are made via the Kerry Lackey Law line. If you have something you'd like to discuss with me, please do give a call. If I hit on your topic, great. If not, you got something else you want to say, feel free to say it.
This is Elio Cobo with the Phoenix Suns, and I'm in the cave with PLR.
With that being said, I do have a caller on hold. Thank you for your patience. This is The Cave Show. This is PLR. Who do I have the privilege of speaking with?
Well, good afternoon, Paul. It's Lou once again.
Lou, what's up, buddy? How are you?
In response to your first question about does the committee get it right, does the committee of the NCAA football ever get it right? I mean, really.
So,
I mean, what's wrong with Central Florida? A team that's been undefeated now 2 years in a row, and they still don't get the proper credit they deserve. I mean, they're stuck at number 9. I mean, the final poll rankings are going to be released tonight. And, you know, if the committee has its way, it's going to be the top four that, you know, all along, it's going to be Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame. Oh, wait, number 4, we got a problem. Should Ohio State move up to number 4? I mean, they're at number 6. Should they be in contention?
You know what? This poll, we'll find out in terms of next week. See, like I said yesterday, I had a really good feeling Ohio State was going to blow the doors out on Michigan. I really just did. I didn't think there was any way they were going to lose to Michigan. This week, I'm a little worried. They're a far superior team to Northwestern, but they're not going to get up for Northwestern the same way they got up for Michigan. So I'm not so sure they're going to win and get in. Oklahoma plays no defense whatsoever.
No.
So should they be in or not, we'll see. Let's see what they do in their title game. There's no guarantee they're going to beat Texas. They lost them once already this year. So let's see if they're impressive in that win versus Texas. I will say this. An impressive win over Texas would mean more to me than an impressive win over Northwestern, and that's by no means sliding the Northwestern Wildcats. Now, to answer your first question about UFC. So here's the deal.
UCF.
Well, let's say you own UCF, I'm sorry. Let's say you own Macy's, okay?
Okay.
And a good friend of yours owns Saks, and another buddy of yours owns Neiman Marcus.
Ooh.
And you're in this area, and all the money that people shop are coming to you. Everything that they do, you're getting a majority of all the money. So now here comes this other store, and we'll call it the tree store. It pops up and is doing really well. And it's attracting a lot of people. It's attracting a lot of viewers, getting a lot of people to come and check it out. But you three have a deal where you talk to each other. You'll only have sales at the same time. You won't rival mm-hmm. each other, so that way you keep making money. This other store asks you if, hey, can I get in on that with you? And you tell them no. So now they're really starting to make a lot of money. Do you want them to share in your profits? Do you want to cut them in and cut a deal? No. And
no.
That's exactly what's happening. The SEC,
actually, there is a tree store. It's called the Dollar Tree Store, so that actually does exist.
There you go. So let's say they're now the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 commissioner does a lousy job because he lets his schools get booted out every year, and I don't think he really gives a crap because of the stadiums that they're played in. But that's another story. So let's say, so now the Pac-12, the Big Ten, Pac-12, Big Ten, SEC, and the ACC, they're making all, and the Big 12, they're making all the money, right? They don't want another team to come in and get a piece of that pie. They don't want that to happen. So they're going to set the tables against them. So they're going to say, well, they don't play anybody. They wouldn't last in this conference. So what happens? They play Auburn at the end of last year, and they beat the brakes off Auburn. So then when they come back and say, well, Auburn was down because they didn't make the Final Four or the Final Four in the playoffs, and so they were down and they didn't have any motivation to play. So there's their excuse. The thing that we have to always remember is those schools will never schedule home and homes against these smaller schools.
No.
They just will not do it. And until they start doing it, and until they're forced to start doing it, they will always be able to say they can't play with us. Because Ohio State, or I'll go right here. Notre Dame played a home-and-home with ASU. Notre Dame said, well, we want our game against ASU to be played at Jerry's World. We want our home game there. That way we get all that dome money. We'll be the home team. We want it all. They did that. Then when it was time to come to ASU the following year, Notre Dame said, you know what? We really want to buy our way out of this game. Because they really don't want a home and home. They wanted a home, period. Well, ASU is also in a big conference, and they said, no, can't buy your way out. You've got to come to Tempe. And they did, and they got shellacked. That's a whole other story. But you don't see that anymore. Lou, do you remember back in the day you'd open up and you have, like, Texas play Ohio State, and then the next
sure.
year Ohio State would play Texas, and all they do is flip homes? The day you see a team play Central Florida at Central Florida, the day you see someone go to Boise and play Boise State, the day you see these guys go to BYU and play BYU, it's not going to happen because they're not going to, one, risk being exposed that this is a team that may be able to beat us, one, and two, what's their financial gain? What do they gain? It's all about what do we gain. What can we lose? We can lose some money. We can lose in the rankings. We can lose all this. What do we gain by going to Boise? Nothing. So the risk-reward isn't there for them. So that's why you'll see these schools will take these home-and-homes. But your home is on a neutral site, and their home is at their home. They're not going to do it, Lou. It's just the way it boils out. And the only way we're ever going to see it happen, it possibly happen, is if they go to a 16 playoffs. And I really think there should be a 16 playoff. I don't like 8, but I like 6. Because you can still get your big conference winners in. They
right.
can still be happy and cash their checks. There could be a bye week for the top 2 seeded teams. And maybe now you get a UCF in. Maybe now you get a South Florida in. Maybe now you get a Boise in. That's why I like college basketball a lot. They can care less. They'll play anybody. Because they know they're going to get in. Duke knows they're getting in the tournament. At the end of the day, they know they're in the tournament. So they don't care. They'll go play you. Whatever.
Yeah, because I'm going to bring this up on my show on Saturday, of course. So,
Yeah.
As I mentioned about the 7 overtime game on Saturday that happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that game was ridiculous when you get to that point. I mean, you know, you're risking more injuries or anything. I mean, there's got to be a better way to do it than, you know, with their current system, right? Because I think once it gets past 4, it gets ridiculous.
You know why they went to that, Lou? Because people were sick of seeing ties in college football. And they were trying to incent people to go for wins and not ties. So technically, really, the only way they can do it is take the NFL rule and say both team gets the ball provided the first team doesn't score a touchdown, and then you play until someone wins. The problem is, and I get what you're saying, someone can get hurt, but how often do we see a 7 overtime game? So this way they're trying to shorten the game. They don't want it to go – they don't want to put 15 minutes back on the clock and have a team play 15 minutes. And then now you go back and you're still playing until someone wins by putting another 15 minutes on the clock. And they don't want that. Whereas with this, it's just line up at the 25 and go. So I see both sides. I see exactly where you're coming from. I think it's the absurd, but I think they're saying – when was the last time we saw a 7 overtime game? So we'll roll the dice with that. We just don't want any more ties.
Well, have them just play like the NFL. You play a 10-minute, overtime, and you know, each does get the ball except for a touchdown. And if you're tied at the end of that, that's just the way it goes.
Because they want it tied.
That was the equivalent of like playing like a 5-hour game. It was a 5-hour game.
Very true. Very true.
No
they
one
don't
wants
want
to see
ties.
That.
Ties are bad.
I know.
So
it's just like kissing your
football.
Sister. I've heard that one before.
Yep. Ties are bad. They wanted ties out. And I think a lot of it has to do with, I remember a game years ago, Florida State was playing Florida. I think they were down like 28-0 or something ridiculous like that. And they fought all the way back, and Bobby Bowden took the tie. Because he said his kids fought too hard to get back for them just to give away, you know, go for 2 and then not have any reward. So Nebraska tied a couple games back in the day. I think they just didn't want to see it. Either you win the game or you lose the game.
You know, if it came down to that, I was – because back then I think more actually went for 2, you know, than trying to just leave it for a tie. I mean, you know, I wouldn't mind going for 2 more often, trying to go for a win. Why self overtime? You can try and go for the win.
I hear
you. No guts, no glory.
I hear you, but yeah. Risk reward. That's what it always boils down to.
That's right.
But
nothing wrong with that.
I don't think they're going to go back to that one. I think that ship has long since sailed, my friend.
Since 1996. Wow, I'm that old.
Yep.
Oof. I'm getting really old.
Aren't we all?
I'll be 50 in a year and a half.
I'm beating you to it. 50 is 7 months away. It's knocking on the door.
So you were born in 69?
Yes.
Yeah, so was my cousin.
Yep. Yep, so I got that extra decade in.
Just barely.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
sir. I got it.
So I'll be bringing this up, on my show Saturday night. So I'll have to cover because it's a pretty big week.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a huge week this week. The games, the conference finals actually mean something because if Georgia wins, here's a dilemma. Now here what I think is a dilemma. If Georgia wins. If they somehow beat Alabama, you know the committee's not going to keep Alabama out. So now you got Georgia and Alabama in, and Notre Dame is in because they're undefeated.
Yes.
And Clemson is in, provided they win their ACC title game, which I honestly think is going to happen too. So if Georgia wins, there's no discussion about Ohio State or Oklahoma.
I don't think Georgia's going to win, but I do think it's going to be a very competitive game against Alabama. I mean, you know, I'm going to give Georgia credit. I don't think they got enough to overtake Alabama's defense. And with Tag, of course, there, you know, they'll give it a game, but it's not going to be enough.
I hear you, but you know what? Last year we thought the same thing. Georgia got in. Georgia and Bama got in. So here's my point. And if I'm other conferences, this is where you have to start saying, why are we allowing the SEC to constantly screw us? If I'm another conference, if I'm the Big 12, you told us we had to have a conference title game. We even redid our rules because we needed to have enough teams to have conferences, and we didn't even do that. We're just saying the top two teams in our conference, they're going to play for a mythical conference title. And then we still won't qualify?
Mythical.
Or if you're the Big Ten and you have Michigan, or I mean, you have Ohio State playing for this title game with one loss, being a bad loss to Purdue, and they lose or they win the Big Ten and they don't get in. So you're telling me that just if it's title games, Alabama basically can lose and they're in no matter what. Georgia can beat Alabama, and that seals their resume and they're in no matter what, to the point that Oklahoma and Ohio State would be out. So I just – if I'm the commissioner of another conference, I would have an issue with that.
Yes. I think we all would.
So it is what it is.
Yeah, you're not going to please everybody either.
No, you're not. But the point right now is I don't know if you're pleasing really anybody. Unless you're in the SEC. Because think about the payouts. The SEC, if Georgia wins, for the second year in a row, they guaranteed a double payout for their top.
How much is that?
You know
how
what I mean? No matter
what.
I don't remember. But it's a bunch of millions. It starts with an M.
In the millions. Okay, I think I get it.
So.
Right.
Let me see. You know what I'm saying? So those other teams, they're being left out of the money, and they're doing nothing about it.
Right.
It's kind of sad when you think about it.
I know. Well, it's moments like this where I'm glad I'm not on the committee. I probably I would never hear the end of it. Like, what is this idiot doing?
Okay, so here it is. Let me read this to you. Georgia, Alabama, and SEC will not receive any distributions from the NCAA for making or winning the title game. Quote, the conference for each of the four semifinalists will receive $6 million. With the SEC, $12 million for two entries. So you don't get it for the championship game, but if they get two teams in, they're going to get double that $6 million. So they'll get 12. The conference will get $12 million. And, Lou, last point on this.
Yes.
Don't look at it just as money either. Look at the bigger picture.
Oh.
If Georgia and Alabama both get in 2 years in a row, and I'm recruiting, right? And I'm recruiting, and I go sit down, and I'm, I don't know, Florida State. Hey, we really want you to come to our school. Yeah, guess what? I just had Georgia's coach in. I just had Alabama's coach in. And not only did I watch them play in their conference title game, I watched them play in the Final Four, and then I watched them play in a title game. That's a lot of exposure. What can you offer me? So here's why I get confused that these other conferences are saying, if you're the Pac-12, you're basically saying, we don't really care about that extra exposure. We don't really care. So
okay, I reach out on that one.
You know what I mean? That's extra exposure.
Yeah.
And the biggest point I'll make here is ASU hired Coach Herm Edwards. And a lot of people around here was like, oh, I don't know. And I don't know if you could translate what I just said, but it was, Okay. Basically, they poo-pooed it. But by him coming here, I want to tell you the differences that he did, and I'm not going to kick dirt on Todd Graham because I like Todd Graham as a person. But I want you to really stop and think about this for a second. ASU, I think, played on one ESPN game last year.
Mm-hmm.
They also lost to California schools. I think they beat UCLA, if I'm not mistaken, but they lost to SC or vice versa. So this year, Herm comes in. They beat SC. They beat UCLA. And they recruit in California. That's their hotbed. They also were on ESPN against Michigan State. And they had two other ESPN games. Their last game of the season in a Territorial Cup against their in-state rival, Arizona, was on Fox Sports 1. So, worst-case scenario, they had four nationally televised games, and they had two games in California where they do the majority of their recruiting. Just by and no one can tell me that the Herm Edwards ESPN connection did not help with these games. And now you're 7-5. So, if I'm Herm Edwards and I'm sitting in a living room of a kid, not that Herm needs to do this, but how easy for me to say, hey, come play for us? We beat these two schools in California. We beat SC. We beat UCLA. UCLA, guys, they're just starting over with Chip Kelly. It's going to be a couple years before he gets his entire system in. We play five freshmen on our defense. If you're ready to come and play and you can compete and it's your job, it's your job. And yeah, we beat SC. We went into their building and we beat them in California, and their coach is on the hot seat. Oh, yeah, and by the way, we nationally televise games on ESPN and Fox Sports. You don't think that's an advantage? So that's what the SEC basically does every year, and that's why I think Larry Scott is doing a piss-poor job as a Pac-12 commissioner. He's letting the SEC not only take the money but take the shine, because Alabama can say, well, you know where we are every year. Georgia, you know where we are every year. LSU, you know where we are
right.
Every other year. You know, so they can tell the Pac-12, well, if we play perfect, we may be able to squeeze in that game. Oklahoma, if we play perfect, we may be able to squeeze in that game. Big Ten, if we play perfect, other conferences should say that's enough. But they're not, so maybe they have pictures on it.
Right.
So, what else you got for me, my friend? I'm going to a couple items to get to before the guests call in.
All right, I think it's just about done. I didn't think I had much to talk about, but I guess it looks like I did. So on that note, I shall leave you for the day, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, buddy, have a good day. Take care now.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. One and only little good friend of the program, always glad to hear from him. If I'm one of these other commissioners, I'm screaming bloody hell. And I know I went on a tangent on that one for a while. But it's just the truth. It is just flat out the truth. We're brought to you by Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located in Chandler, Arizona, Chandler Heights, and Alma School. Let them know PLR so that you get 10% off of any cigar purchase that you have. We're going to talk a lot of things with Greg Moore. He's scheduled to call in. Arizona Republic AZ Central award-winning columnist. Calling about 5 to 10 minutes. But there's something I want to talk about. So last night, you know, I'm into basketball, go figure, right? And Zach LaVine, who I like Zach LaVine. He's a good player, a good young player. And I saw a play called for Zach LaVine. And the play involved a pick set by Wendell Carter, the Bulls, Chicago Bulls #1 draft pick. And it's a play that the coach wanted to run. Right, so this is the play they called in the huddle. And this is what they wanted to run. But there was a little problem with this play. The problem with the play, Levine wanted to run. At all. He wanted to go one-on-one. He did not want interruptions on his one-on-one. And so when Wendell Carter came up to set the screen that the coach was for, Zach waved it off. So let me say this one more time. Coach calls for the screen. Screen, it comes up. Zach LaVine says, don't want it. Coach calls up the first screen. He goes opposite way. Coach calls up the second screen. Waves it off. Takes a long three. Short. Bulls lose. San Antonio wins. Zach LaVine, I'm a confident shooter. I've made lots of shots like that. I don't want them to double team me. That's why I waved off the screen. Third year, fourth year player. This isn't Kobe waving off the screen. This isn't LeBron waving off the screen. This isn't MJ waving off the screen. This isn't James Harden waving off the screen. This isn't Steph Curry waving off a screen. This isn't Chris Paul waving off a screen. This Russell Westbrook waving off the screen. Zach LaVine waving off the screen. And I know you're probably saying, what's the big deal? The big deal to me is Fred Hoiberg needs to be fired. No, Paul, there you go again, Homer. No, I'm serious. Hoiberg needs to be fired. 2 years ago, I don't know if anybody remembers this. You can go to YouTube and find it if you want. If you want to take a timeout, Fred Hoiberg did. Anyone to talk about Jimmy Butler, back when Jimmy Butler played for the Bulls. So he looks at Jimmy Butler and he tells him what he wants. Jimmy Butler looks him dead in the face, makes a face, like a stank face, like, how dare you talk to me, stank face. And he said, beep, no. So let me rephrase this one more time. The coach told the player what he wanted. The player looked at the coach and said, beep, no. And then the player didn't do it, and the coach didn't say anything. Player didn't get benched. Player didn't get disciplined outwardly. Nothing happened. You know what happens when you allow a player to do that to you when you are an NBA head coach? The rest of the locker room goes, huh, free for all, we can do what we want. Jimmy told him beep no, well, beep no too. We're all beep no's. There is no way on earth that Jimmy Butler will look in the eyes of Greg Popovich, Steve Kerr, Tibbs, and say, beep no to what they said without knowing, excuse me, that his butt would be sitting on the bench. So I honestly believe he lost control of his things. Been that way for a while. He has no control of his team. And if as a coach, you have no control of your team, you're done. Fred took over Tibbs' team on 42-40. Following year went 41-41. Then went 27-55, now 5-16. Overall record as the head coach through 267 games, 115 up, 152 down. With one playoff appearance when they got ousted 4-2. Why is he still the coach? Why is he in year number 4 as the head coach of the Chicago Bulls? What has he done? Who has he developed? What superstar has he cultivated? When you think of the top 5 coaches, is he there? The next 5? 5 after that, maybe? I don't know where you put Fred Hoiberg. I mean, I'm trying to think where he would be. Hell, I don't even remember who coaches Charlotte right now. Who the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets is, but I damn sure know he's better than Fred Hoiberg. This player told his coach no. This one player tells his coach, F no. And now we got a player that just ignores him. He does not have control of his team. But I bet his badge worked today when he got to the center. I'm going to give you his record one more time. Just in case you missed it. 115 up, 152 down. Fred Hoiberg is still gainfully employed of a team that's god-awful. If the season ended today, don't you love those statements? If the season ended today, which it doesn't, and all the ping pong balls fell where they should fall, the Bulls would have number 4 pick in the draft. And the only thing making the Bulls record not worse than what it should be is the fact that Atlanta and Cleveland are in that division. And I know we do so much about conference, and not division anymore like we used to back in the old days. Because back in the old days, it was all about the division within your conference. But with the exception of Milwaukee, that's really good, and Indiana, that's okay, and Detroit, that's okay, Bulls play in a crappy conference. Crappy division. They should be thankful that that's the case. And Fred Hoiberg should be thankful that he still has a job. See, I will never say the dude working the drive-thru at Wendy's should be fired. There's no buyout. There's no golden parachute for him. You know, he's going to be lucky if he can go find another job at McDonald's. But when you're a head NBA coach, Fred will get hired. He'll get hired as an assistant somewhere. Or maybe he'll go back to the college ranks. And you know what? At the college ranks, Fred was good. Did a good job at Iowa State. But he's not a pro head coach. And it's time that Gar and Pax figure it out. Maybe the bigger problem is maybe Gar and Pax shouldn't be in the position they're in. Levine should be talked to and disciplined. And you know it's not going to happen because for whatever reason, this is a team that looks like they're very passive-aggressive when it comes to their players. And no one wants to just take and say, no, that's not allowed. You're a young player. You're developing in this league. We need you to do what your coach to do. But no one's going to do that because they signed Zach LaVine to big money. And Fred could be gone at any time. The Bear needs to get it together.
This is Trevor Ariza with the Phoenix Suns, and you're in the cave with PLR.
So yesterday, N'Keal Harry announced he'd be going pro. And feel free to read more about that on thesportscave.com. Put an article up on N'Keal Harry. Poll will be going up right after the show, should N'Keal play in whatever bowl game ASU is going to. I say no, yet, hell no, no way, no. This is a young man that stands to make millions of dollars. And it looks like ASU may be going to the Sun Bowl in El Paso. It's a good bowl, good payout, New Year's Eve. But that payout doesn't go to N'Keal Harry. That goes to ASU in the Pac-12. So why should he risk Achilles or an ACL or an MCL or a hamstring or a shoulder or a neck or a concussion or a hangnail or anything to play in this game? And I know a lot of old people, oh, well, you got to have loyalty to your team. You got to have loyalty to the coaches. Yada, 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 yada. Bull crap. Bull crap. When the coaches aren't showing that loyalty back this way, then you should have the loyalty going back that way. How much loyalty did Jimbo Fisher show to Florida State when Texas A&M came knocking on his door? How much loyalty did Willie Taggart show after 1 year at Oregon when Florida State came knocking on his door? See, this loyalty thing goes both ways. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be loyal to your coach. You shouldn't be loyal to your school. But if you are in the – look, if N'Keal Harry is going to be a freelance artist when it's football days are done, he's going to be a ninth grade PE teacher. He's going to go and get in the banking business and become a CEO of a company. Then you know what? Go ahead, play in this game. If he's a sixth round pick, fifth round pick, and needs to showcase himself in a big game a little bit more, you know what, N'Keal Harry? You go play in that game. N'Keal Harry is a 100% surefire first round pick. All that can happen is that he loses money if he gets hurt. That's it. What positive, and I know I'm thinking this on a personal level, and maybe you could say it's a selfish level, but for what could N'Keal Harry gain in the next stage of his life playing in the NFL by playing in this bowl game? He gains absolutely nothing. He's proven everything. 22 touchdowns via the reception. Another 3 rushing. Another 1 via the punt. What else does he have to prove? He'll probably be the number 1 wide receiver taken in the NFL draft. What else does he have to prove? He needs to go out there and prove that he can star in the Sun Bowl on December 31st at 2 o'clock. That's what he needs to prove. To who? You think there's an NFL coach or a scout sitting out there saying, yeah, that N'Keal Harry, boy, he's on the fence. He's really on the fence. Yeah, I think I got him slotted for the 4th or 5th round. And then he blows up in the Sun Bowl. I mean, blows up in the Sun Bowl. 12, 13 catches, 200 yards, 48 touchdowns, and that GM scout says, ah, where's this guy been hiding? Damn, he's good. Let's get him. No. Doesn't happen that way. Just doesn't happen that way. He gains absolutely nothing by playing in that game. If you don't believe me, we'll get the buy-in from my guest here. Arizona Republic, AZ Central, award-winning columnist, Greg Moore, Kerry Lackey-Lalonde, Cave Show with PLR. What's up, my man? How you feeling today?
What up, Paul? How you, man?
Man, I am good. You tell me. I was just thinking this way. What does N'Keal Harry gain by playing in a bowl game on the 31st if this is on bowl?
Well, I mean, what do I know, right? So I talked to Mac Brown. Mac Brown, he's coached in a couple of bowl games. He said he coached Ricky Williams, and Ricky Williams wasn't going to miss a game. He played in a bowl game that was largely deemed unnecessary. He even played in a high school all-star game that was a college all-star game that was deemed completely unnecessary. And between the two games, he ended up gaining 300 and some odd yards. We all know how highly he was selected in the NFL draft. Yeah, he might have hired an agent that he might have regretted. And yeah, his career might have been a little bit funky. But anybody who would look at Ricky Williams' career and say that it was a failure, I don't think they're being objective. Okay, what do I know, right? So I talked more to Mac Brown, and Mac Brown just got hired over at North Carolina. And, of course, he's the guy who restored Texas to the top of the map. And Mac Brown says he'll always be indebted to Cedric Benson. Cedric Benson played in a Rose Bowl against Michigan 2005. Hyperextended his knee on the first play of the game. Doctor said, don't go back in there. Cedric Benson said, wrap it up. Went back in there and played ball. He was the last one in the locker room after the game, after Texas won. He didn't have a great game, gained about 73 yards. Mac Brown said, what's wrong, man? Why are you crying? Is it your knee? He said, Coach, this is the last time I'm ever going to be able to wear this uniform for a ball game. And it occurred to me that maybe football players just enjoy playing football. Maybe they form a camaraderie with their buddies that this is something that we shouldn't underestimate the importance of. Okay, maybe you don't like Mac Brown. Maybe you feel like Mac Brown is just saying that because he needs to protect his own butt. So I talked to Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops said, yo, listen, man, I've been in 18 bowl games. This happened for me a time or two. I want to say it was 26. Bob Stoops even had a player leave in the middle of the season to focus on the NFL. Stoops said, look, I try to stay in my lane on this stuff. And I wrote about all this. This is all on the Arizona Republic. You can find this on our site. You can find it on my Twitter. But he said he stays out of it, and he understands if guys want to make a decision one way or another. So, okay, that's reasonable. Still wasn't enough for me, so I talked to Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk knows N'Keal Harry. They're both Valley products, right? Christian right. Kirk came out as a junior, went to Texas A&M, and had an opportunity to play in the Belk Bowl. P, have you ever heard of the Belk Bowl?
Yeah, it's right over there right after the Tangerine and Blue Bonnet Bowl, sandwiched in between there somewhere.
Yeah, except way lower tier because at least I know what Tangerine and Blue Bonnet is. Right? So the Belk Bowl, Christian Kirk decided to play, twisted his ankle, a grade 2 or 3 sprain, which means it was at least a partially torn ankle ligament. Christian Kirk blistered those boys for 189 yards and 3 touchdowns. Still got ready for the draft, said he only missed a week of training. So what I'm saying to you is, what you think, what I think, it's important, it matters, we've got opinions. But I went and talked to some guys who've kind of been in that situation, and what I learned is that this is a way, and The Rock means way, harder decision than we would have thought about. Right? Like for us, we're just like, dude, sit down. What you got to prove? Let this be for the future. But apparently it's a much tougher decision than that.
And you know what I expected, especially from him, someone who is so team-oriented, team first. I mean, you were at the press conference yesterday. We see the relationship he has with Manny Wilkins. We saw that on the field after the game. We know the relationship with Chase Lucas. They were high school teammates at Chandler, and he's known Herm before Herm was the coach. So we know those relationships. So understand that. I'm just looking out, I think on my end, I'm thinking, what does the kid have left? And I go back to the Smith kid that played at Notre Dame. And, yeah he's still playing Jaylen on Sundays. Smith. And, yeah, he's still making a good living. But he went from a guaranteed salary, playing for the love of the game. And I love what Herb said. You play because you love the game, and the check is part of it. Don't play for the check and then love the game. But he will never get back that 20-some million dollars that he lost by playing in a meaningless game to his team, because it wasn't for a national title, and I was at that game at the Fiesta Bowl. He'll never get back that 20-some-odd million for playing that game when he was already proven. And so I guess I'm saying, in terms of loyalties, I understand it. I really do. I get it. Look, weekend warriors go out there under loyalty if they promise their buddy they're going to play.
That's right.
I just think there has to come this time where these kids have to think, you know what? This is what I wanted to do my whole life, but I want to get paid doing it. And I want to get paid the most doing it if I'm going to be the best. And to be the best, I got to be in the best shape. But like you said,
reasonable
we'll
position.
See.
Reasonable position. Let me give you a couple more things to think about. Were you at the Fiesta Bowl last year?
I was.
And who did we see but Mr. Saquon Barkley? Quan lit up that Washington defense, and that Washington defense had at least four pros on it, three draft picks and one undrafted free agent who currently plays for the Arizona Cardinals. And that's not even including the guys who might go pro this year who were on that defense last year. Saquon lit them up. Saquon went number two. Running backs don't go number two anymore, right? Like, that's only for QBs and edge rushers. So did Saquon earn himself some money with that performance? I'm just saying, I'm not saying I've got an opinion one way or another because it ain't my body, it ain't my money, it ain't my situation. If you want to ask me what I think, I'll tell you. But what I'm saying mainly is that the conversation is a lot trickier than just, hey, yo, sit and earn a bunch of money because you've already proved it all. What if that creates questions? Is he dedicated? Does he love the game? What if there's questions about his competitiveness, his drive, his desire to prove himself or get better? Right? These are all things that people are going to ask and people are going to wonder about. And again, what if you just like to play football? What if you just want to get out there and get a run?
I hear you. I hear you. Tough decision. We will see soon on the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Arizona Republic, AZ Central, award-winning columnist Greg Moore here on the Cave Show with PLR. So the Cardinals today, or last night, or whenever, decided today we're going to start cutting players. Cut their right tackle, Andre Smith.
Yeah.
And cut cornerback. Yeah. And I mess up his name all the time, so I apologize.
Benay Ben Wickery.
Wickery? I think I got it right.
Ben Wickery. Yeah, Benay
Ben Wickery. Benay Ben Wickery. Greg, is it too little, too late at this point? 2-9?
Yeah, probably. Look, man, this is a tough situation, right? Well, so there was a game earlier. Lord help me if I can remember who the heck they were playing. They had an opportunity to win the game. They kicked a field goal, missed the field goal, ended up giving a score up right going back the other way. And this is when McCoy was still the offensive coordinator. What if the Cardinals get that win, still on the hot seat? What if they find a way to get it done against the Raiders? Is Coach Wilkes still in the hot seat? And that's just how close things are in the NFL. And look, this is a pressure business, we all know. But my biggest question is, at what point do you fire a coach in the first year? If you look at a list of coaches who were fired after 1 year, you get names like Joe Bugle, Art Shell, and Hugh Jackson, who, surprisingly, all three of them were Raiders. So do you really want to be the Raiders? I mean, they haven't been relevant since, what, 2003, 2004, that era? They really haven't been the Raiders since the Tuck rule. Right, and that franchise has been in disarray since. I think that in general, firing coaches after one season is the wrong way to go, particularly when you hire a coach who's known for running a particular style of defense, and that is not the defense that your staff and your personnel are in place to coach. So for me, I feel like Steve Wilkes ought to get time with players who more so fit the system that he's trying to run. I'm not saying Deion Buchanan can't play. I think Deion Buchanan is a terrific player, but I don't know that he fits this system. It would not be fair to Deion Buchanan to keep asking him to do it, and I don't think it would be fair to Steve Wilkes to keep giving him guys such as that and asking them to do things that they've never been asked to do before and then ask them to do it on the pro level. Look at a guy like Benay Ben Wickery, though. That was tough. Ben Wickery, they said he fell asleep on the last route against Oakland and gave up a big gain that put Oakland in position to win that game. And if you remember back to the preseason, Ben Wickery was playing ball. He was forcing fumbles. He was ball hawking. And I think that's really what the greatest frustration is. If you remember, Vegas only picked the Cardinals to win six games. I thought they were going to beat that. But everybody knows I'm famous for saying my predictions are relatively meaningless because I'm aware that I don't have enough information to make a sound judgment all of the time. So now the Cardinals in the preseason popped so many turnovers that there had not been a defense to pop that many turnovers in the preseason since the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that defense was led by John Lynch, by Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, Rondé Barber. And so you're thinking, man, Steve Wilks sounds like a boss. He acts like a boss. He walks like a boss. He talks like a boss. The players are saying great things about him. Larry Fitzgerald told me Steve Wilks is smart. He notices things other people don't notice. You wouldn't think he was new at this job. You'd think he'd been a head coach for 10 years. This is Larry Fitzgerald. This is not me. And so I'm wondering what magically broke between that stunning preseason and this really sharp fall in the regular season. And I don't think that Steve Wilks, I think he knows what he's doing. I don't think he's lost out, has gone wrong, that they're going to have to shake some things up. And I think that really is more about personnel and fit than it is about Steve Wilks and coaching. And again, that's not even to say that these guys can't play. I think they have some really, really talented players in that locker room. Hell, I think Benae Benwickery is a hell of a ball player. But just sometimes circumstances come around and things just don't work. And I think that's what's happening here. So you just got to shake it up. But I would disagree with bringing in a new head coach at this stage of the game. And I'll give you another piece of it. When you really start to look at that list of coaches who've been fired after their first year, you'll notice that three of those coaches happen to be African-American. And you just kind of wonder, because there are so few African-American head coaches, it just kind of makes you pause and say, I just wonder if black coaches are getting the best opportunities. I wonder if black coaches are getting, you know, the same amount of leeway or of latitude as other coaches. But then on the other hand, we're in a position now where we've got a record number of black coaches in the NFL. Cardinals staff, we've got a black head coach, black offensive coordinator, black defensive coordinator. It's the third time it's happened in league history, and when it became the case, nobody even blinked. So this is just me taking you through my thought process and wondering, at what point do you fire a coach after his first year? And frankly, I'm not an advocate of it in this case.
We got 2 minutes, and I got two questions. I'm
going
to load them together. First,
rapid fire.
Marv Lewis stuff, because he's been around 8 years too long. But the question is, when the Cardinals hired Wilks, was that a bad move on his part to take a job knowing that he didn't have the proper personnel to play the scheme that he wanted? Or is that a bad move on Kime's part to hire a coach knowing that the defense that he wanted to run wouldn't fit the personnel that he had?
So if you're Wilks, you got to take the job, because you don't know when the opportunity's coming back around, right? You've never been a head coach. There's only, 30, 32 of these jobs in the world, right? Like, there's only so many NFL head coaches out there. So when they offer you that job, you really ain't got room to be picking and choosing. You got to take the job they offer you. I think a big mistake was that Wilks said, hey, yo, if the defense ain't broke, I'm not going to fix it. And then he changed the defense. I disagreed with that when it happened. They swayed me. They said, actually, if you look at the defense that the Cardinals ran last year, 70% of the time they walked a guy down in what they call an overfront, and an overfront effectively is a 4-3. That is the scheme we have. All right, I accepted that. These guys know football better than I know football. But it's clear to me that there's either a problem with the scheme, and we've seen the scheme work in Carolina, or the personnel within the scheme inclined to think that if they just swapped out some parts and gave guys opportunities to excel in ways that we know they can. Hassan Reddick is a good football player. Deion Buchanan is a good football player. But they're just not fitting this
system right now. And who knows? Maybe you give them another offseason and maybe they learn it. I don't know what the future holds, but I just don't think we ought to fire Steve Wilks. We be in the
online
media, of course, not we be in the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. Online on the Cave Show, the one and only Arizona Public, AZ Central, award-winning columnist Greg Moore. So you know what you reminded me of? We got a minute left. What you reminded me of was Harlem Nights. Are you in charge of the girls? Yes, I mean, are you in charge of the girls? Yes, I'm in charge of the girls. Well, either they have a problem with arithmetic or you do, because they're coming up short. And that's exactly what you said. Do you have the talent? Are you in charge of the defense? Yes, I'm in charge of the defense. Are you in charge of the defense? Yes, I'm in charge of the defense. Then there's something wrong with the personnel. That's exactly what you just said. You went Harlem Nights on me. And I don't even think you realized it, but you did.
I had no idea what was happening, man. But if you throw my quotes up in the air, it'll turn into sunshine, I guess. I don't know.
Got to ask you this on the way out the door. Ed Cole this yesterday. Better friend Fred on Saturday side, Bubba or Grady?
Wow. Grady, man. Grady was there every day, man. That's what you need in a friend, man. You need somebody who's there every day, in and out, up, down, thick, thin. You know, it's not about what you do. It's about how often you show up.
All right. I guess I'm the solo band on the Bubba route. Tell everyone how they get a hold of you.
Find me on Twitter, at Writing More, WRITING More, MOORE. Look me up, AZ Central Sports. Read me in the Arizona Republic. I'm in there several times a week. And I'm also at all the games, so if you see me, say what up, stuff.
And by the way, I've been saying this, I'm going to say it all week, because as you know, I went to ASU. The Territorial Cup is back in Tempe where it belongs. Just thought I'd throw that out there real quick. But everybody, I appreciate you coming on, and I'm sure we'll catch up sooner rather than later.
Anytime, my man. You know that.
All right, appreciate it, bro. Talk to you later. The one only Greg Moore, Arizona Republic AZ Central award-winning columnist. Always good to have him on. Make sure you get us on social media at Sports Cave, Twitter, Facebook fan page, and Instagram, Cave is always with the K. SportsCave.com, keep up with the articles, Cave is always with the K. Get me directly at PLR on Sports on Twitter. Until tomorrow, I appreciate everyone calling all calls you made via the Kerry Lackey Law Line. Until then, this is PLR, this is the Cave Show. Have a good Tuesday.